This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I've spent a lot of vacation time with private investigator Matthew Scudder. What I mean is, I often pick up Scudder novels on my time off. Scudder is the creation of mystery writer Lawrence Block, who many mystery readers consider one of the best in the field. Block started the Scudder series in the mid-70s. His early crime fiction, from the 60s, is being republished by Carolyn Graff. Block finished his latest Scudder novel about a week ago, but that won't be out for a while. His 12th Scudder book, A Long Line of Dead Men, will be published in paperback in February. Let's start with a short reading from that book, which will give you a sense of who Scudder is. Scudder's life has changed since the series began. He started as a heavy drinker. About halfway through the series, he joined AA. He used to be a loner. Now he's in a committed relationship with a former prostitute named Elaine, who recently used her savings to open a Manhattan gallery.
When we met, I was a cop with a brand new gold shield in my pocket and a wife and two sons in Syosset, and she was a young call girl, bright and funny and beautiful. We made each other happy for a few years, and then I drank my way out of my marriage in the police department, and we pretty much lost track of each other. She went on doing what she'd been doing, saving her money and investing in real estate, keeping fit at the health club, stretching her mind in night school. A couple of years ago, circumstances threw us together again, and what we'd had was still there, stronger than ever, and richer for the years we'd lived through. At first, she went on seeing clients, and we both pretended that was okay, but of course it wasn't. And eventually I bit the bullet and said so, and she admitted she'd already put herself out of business. We kept inching closer and closer to marriage. Last April, she'd sold her old place on East 50th and picked out an apartment in the Park Vendome, and we'd moved in together. It was her money that bought the place, and I'd refused to let her put my name on the deed. I paid the monthly maintenance on the apartment and picked up the checks when we went out to dinner. She covered the household expenses. Eventually, we would put all our money together, but we hadn't gotten around to that yet. Eventually, we would get married, too, and I wasn't sure why it was taking us so long. We kept not setting a date. We kept letting it slide.
Lawrence Block, you once described yourself as writing the episodic biography of someone who doesn't really exist, a description I quite like. Tell us more where you see Matthew Scudder, your private detective, in his life now. At what point is he in his life? I mean, he's 55 years old.
Yeah, he's 55 years old, and his life keeps changing. And that's what's made the book so interesting for me. That's why I've been able to write them for as long as I have, I think, because I quite honestly don't know what Scudder's going to do next.
I read your books in part for the atmosphere. The mood of the character, the mood of the situations you've created. I mean, Scudder is somebody who wants something he can't have, alcohol. He deals both with the meaning and the meaninglessness of life. He's very good at what he does, but he has very little to show for it in terms of financial reward or material gain. And that doesn't often bother him, but it sometimes does. And he's a guy who stands back from the world and looks at it and tries to figure it out. This is an atmosphere that I find very appealing. What kind of atmosphere do you want to create? What kind of mood do you want your Scudder books to have?
I don't know exactly. I suppose in a certain way I write the books to find out. I'll start out with a plot idea, and I don't really know what state of mind of Scudder's is going to be reflected. I don't know what the moods are going to be. That develops very much as the book goes along.
The mood of some of the Scudder books were so dependent on his drinking and then later on his not drinking yet wanting to, and his loneliness. And now I think he's got his drinking pretty well in check. I mean, yeah, he still wants a drink and he still goes to AA meetings, but it doesn't constantly gnaw at him in the same way that it did. And he's got his loneliness in check. I mean, he's in it for the long haul with Elaine. So are you having to find other things for him to deal with?
There's always the danger in a series, if you let it evolve organically, that eventually you're going to write yourself out of a job.
Right.
And I thought that it happened with 8 Million Ways to Die when he stopped drinking. I thought that that exhausted the character as a character. And it did for a couple of years. I was a little while between books there. And then I discovered that for Scudder, as well as for people in the real world, there is life after sobriety. And I think there's also a similar danger now, in that he is in a stable relationship, and he seems to have, if not solved, then outlasted most of the major problems in his life. So that is part of the challenge, is to find a way that he can still be involved in a compelling story, even given this change in his circumstances.
You know, when Scudder stopped drinking and he started drinking a whole lot of coffee, you know, because he'd be at AA meetings drinking coffee and he'd go to bars with friends and not drink alcohol but drink lots of coffee, I started thinking, gee, shouldn't he have, like, reflux by now? Or some kind of terrible acid indigestion type of problem. And sure enough, I think he's been drinking more like club soda and Perrier lately. But it occurred to me, you know, this is so typical of life. You know, like, you give up a horrible habit like alcohol, and you substitute something that should be okay like coffee.
Right. Something's going to get you.
Yeah, and then the coffee starts to get you. Then, like, even the coffee becomes a habit that you have to give
right.
up.
Right, right. Well, I don't think he has any troubles with coffee. There is the question as to what's going to happen with his extra relationship dalliance with Lisa Holtzman. That's certainly a question. A lot of people wrote in about that. They said he finally stopped drinking and now he's running around on a lane. I don't like this.
That's right. He's seeing somebody who he met in a previous novel, he was investigating her husband's murder. And two of your novels have ended in big question marks, you know, about whether he's going to continue to pursue that relationship.
Sure.
Why did you put him in a long-term relationship with Elaine, a former prostitute?
Well, it just sort of grew. I didn't have the intention of that either. You know, Elaine is in the books from the very first one. She appears in The Sins of the Fathers and just in a cameo appearance. And then in the eighth book, A Ticket to the Boneyard, that's when they get back together again. And I just really liked the way they were together in that book. And I don't know. It seemed right. I couldn't break them up after that.
Lawrence Block is my guest, and he's an author of many books, including the Matthew Scudder Private Eye series, and the latest in that series is called A Long Line of Dead Men. The first books you wrote under pen names.
Yes.
Why were they pen names?
Well, the books were trash.
What was trash about them?
Just about everything. I'm sustained, Terry, by the knowledge that these books were not printed on acid-free paper.
How many years has it been? They probably still exist, right?
they probably do. People bring them up to me at signings expecting me to sign them. I say, sign it, I won't touch it. You know, get away from me.
So you knew then that you didn't like what you were writing, but it was good experience and to make a book?
It was good experience. It was a good paid apprenticeship.
And these were what, crime novels?
No. These were, I guess now you would call them softcore porn.
How'd you break into that market?
It's hard to remember. Actually, it shouldn't be hard to remember because I am writing a memoir about those days. But it was, my agent suggested that I try one for that market. I had an agent at that point, and I did. The market was just beginning to exist, so I was one of the first people doing it. This was in, like, the late 50s.
What were the boundaries that you had to write within? What would have been going too far?
Well, you couldn't use four-letter words.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't be terribly graphic.
And did there have to be a sturdy plot to rest the the sex scenes on so it would look like a real novel?
No, there had to be the illusion of a plot, but there had to be a lot of incident. And it was wonderful training ground because it was an extremely forgiving medium, as you can imagine, because as long as it was sufficiently erotic and the story kept moving, it didn't really matter if there were vast holes in the plot or anything of the sort. So I learned a lot doing it.
I imagine this helped you write with inhibition also. I mean, without inhibition, because you weren't using your name. So you could try anything without people.
Sure.
You know, holding you accountable.
Very, very true.
I think that's a hard thing for young writers. You're so self-conscious that this isn't good enough and so-and-so isn't going to like this and what if this gets a bad review?
That's right. That's right. I hadn't even particularly thought of that, but it was very liberating in that respect.
Was it liberating, too, to be writing sexual scenes?
I think so. You know, I was like 20 years old at the time. So it was science fiction in a sense for me.
Now, did the covers have illustrations that gave the promise of more than you were going to actually deliver?
Oh, no, I delivered. I delivered. Nobody ever brought the book back for a refund.
What were the covers like?
The covers, actually, and some of them have become extremely collectible because some of these cover artists are treasured by people, paperback collectors who are interested in that sort of thing.
So I know you have not revealed the pen names that you've written under, but you say you're writing a memoir about that period. Will you reveal it in your memoir?
I will. I will tell all.
Wow. How come? After all these years of not telling.
I don't know.
You're a pretty intuitive guy. I mean, you just apparently don't sit back and really brood a lot about what to do. It sounds like you either do it or you don't do it.
I brood a lot, and then I either do it or I don't do it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
My guest is mystery writer Lawrence Block. He writes the Matthew Scudder Private Eye series. Block was named 1994 Grand Master of the Mystery Writers of America. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is mystery writer Lawrence Block. His crime fiction from the 60s is being republished. Here's a reading from one of those early novels. It's called After the First Death. It begins with a man waking up naked on a bed in a strange room. He has no idea how he's gotten there. Maybe he's coming out of a drunken stupor. Maybe it's something worse. All that he's sure of is he's in pain and he's in trouble.
I sat up on the bed and looked around. I started to get up. And there was something on the floor, something sticky that my feet touched. Wet and sticky. I closed my eyes. A shiver went through me, a chill caused by more than the cold and my own nakedness. I kept my eyes closed and folded my arms foolishly across my chest. I did not want to look. I did not want to know. I wanted to go to sleep and stay asleep for ages and wake up elsewhere, miles and years away. I wondered, briefly, if it was a dream. I opened my eyes again. I picked up one foot and looked hopelessly at the bottom of it. Blood. I tried to catch my breath and somehow couldn't, and I looked at the floor, and the nausea came back again in a flood with no warning. I threw up with the spontaneity of the knee-jerk reflex. It was that automatic. I looked, I saw, I vomited. I thought of the way I had reached across the floor as if it were a sea in which I dared not set foot. An apt image. The floor was a sea of blood. A body floated upon this ocean. A girl, black hair, staring blue eyes, bloodless lips. Naked. Dead. Her throat slashed deeply. It had to be a dream. It had to be a dream. It was not a dream. It was not a dream at all. I've done it again, I thought. Sweet Jesus, I've done it again.
What is he afraid he's done again?
Killed a woman in a drunken blackout.
Take us back to 1969. Do you remember writing this book and how you came up with the story and what you were going for?
Yes. Let me see. I think I wrote the book in 67, I think. I got the idea of a person who had managed to get himself out of prison on the strength of one of the recent Supreme Court rulings on inadmissibility of confessions or something like that. And I thought that it would be interesting if such a person found himself committing the same crime again, but became aware that he hadn't really done it, that he'd been framed this time. And then, of course, presumes that perhaps he was framed the first time, too, and this has a great incentive, on the one hand, to avoid capture, and on the other, to solve the crime.
It seems to me you must have been living in two really different worlds, you know, the world that you lived in, and then the world that you wrote about, a world in which people are framed all the time, and people are murdered all the time, and, you know, that crime world of fiction that so many, you know, movies and novels and TV shows are set in.
Right. Well, that's not difficult to enter by simply exploiting one's own innate paranoia. But in this particular book, I was quite familiar with the Times Square scene that I've described here. That was something I knew well at the time.
Why did you know it well?
Oh, because I hung out there a lot.
Uh-huh. What brought you there?
Oh, personal yearnings. Corrupt motives.
Okay. Do you care to elaborate, or do you want to leave it at that?
I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Now, how did you start the Matthew Scudder Private Eye series? After writing a lot of books that weren't part of a series in which there were no recurring characters.
Sure. The Scudder series, unlike some other series that I've found myself doing, was conceived as a series. I set out to write a group of books about this character, and I had the character figured out and the publisher in line for this before I wrote the first book. So it was conceived as a series. What was not conceived was the idea that Scudder would change from one book to another.
Why did you make him an alcoholic?
Oh, he was just that from the beginning. I don't know exactly.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk about the way the series changes, I say sometimes that, you know, in 8 Million Ways to Die, he surprised me by getting sober, and that actually I had no idea he had a problem.
Is that true?
No, I knew he had a problem. That was part of it, that he was, a heavy alcoholic drinker from the early books on, that and the angst-ridden and guilt-ridden nature of the man.
Is Matthew Scudder's drinking based on first-hand experience that you had of drinking?
Well, Scudder and I were different kinds of drinkers, I think, in certain respects. But without getting into this too much, I can say that that he and I both used to drink, and neither of us does now.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something I've been trying to figure out about you.
Okay.
Okay. you know, the mood in the Scudder books, which I so like, is so... It's often so kind of, you know, gloomy. And I mean, there's a murder that he's trying to solve and a drink that he wants to have and he can't. And, you know, there's all these, like, yearnings that are going to go unsatisfied in one way or another. And I get your newsletter. You actually have your own newsletter that updates your readers about, you know, your latest books and where you're going to give a reading and stuff. Your newsletter is so upbeat. It's kind of like, you know, dear readers, feeling great.
You know? Well, you wouldn't want to get a newsletter from Scudder, for God's sake.
Well, I probably would, you know, but you know, I'm trying to figure out now, how is Lawrence Block so kind of like feeling good and upbeat and able to write, you know, this real downbeat kind of series? Like, where do those two connect, you know?
You know, there's one's me and the other's the character, I suppose.
Yeah, but you created the character. I mean, he came from you.
True. True. There was a wonderful story told about Morris Karnofsky, the actor in the Yiddish theater, who auditioned for a Shakespearean role. And he came on, and he talked and introduced himself and everything with a thick accent. And they were giggling hysterically at the thought of him auditioning for Shakespeare. And then they said, all right, well, do the scene, Mr. Karnofsky. And he said, now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by the son of York. And you know, a flawless reading. And they were stunned. And they weren't familiar with his work. And they said, you know, how, Mr. Karnofsky, there's something we have to ask you. It seems so remarkable. And he said, what do you mean? He said, oh, he said, you mean the accent? He said, I'm an actor. You know, I'm an actor. And I love that story. And I think that applies here. The books are darker than I am. You know, I'm a writer.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Oh, this was a treat.
Lawrence Block's latest Matthew Scudder book, A Long Line of Dead Men, will be published in paperback in February. He also writes a series of comic novels about burglar Bernie Rodenbaugh. This is Fresh Air.